from John chapter 9 and verse 25. Hope you won't mind me suspending the series on David's life, and we'll find out about his dilemma sooner or later. I don't know if we're going to continue that into December or we're going to focus on the incarnation and resume 1 Samuel in January. We'll see how the Lord leads. But John chapter 9 and verse 25, remember he said, I know not all about the ideas. I don't know a whole lot about Jesus right now. But one thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. And that really is, in a nutshell, isn't that the testimony of every believer? From Adam and Eve to the last person that's converted on earth. And you know, we have the records of conversions in the Bible. And it's good for us to remind ourselves of our own records of conversion. But I think we would all agree that the first conversions in the Bible were Adam and Eve. That the Lord opened their eyes and saved them from the terrible fall that they had experienced. And we see Abraham being saved and called out of Ur of the Chaldees, and Jacob the conniver being converted. I'm just giving a sampling. Jethro, the heathen, as it were. Of course, we're all heathen, but Jethro got saved. Judah himself was a rascal, and he came to know the Lord. And Rahab, the harlot, and Naaman, the Syrian captain of the army, the mariners on that boat. You know, you can be saved in a boat. You can be saved anywhere in this world. You can be saved on the top of a mountain. You can be saved on a hospital bed. You can be saved in a church. You can be saved in your home. You can be saved driving in your car. You can be saved cooking food, as Dan was, in his little kitchen in the restaurant next door. Any of you remember old Dan days next door? That was Dan, and he got saved, and the Lord had sent seeds into his heart, and while he was, I don't know what you were making. What were you making when the Lord worked in your heart? A tuna melt, and that's one of my favorites. And he got saved in a kitchen. Nebuchadnezzar, perhaps. Manasseh certainly is an example of a rascal being saved. And you know, the New Testament is full of examples. Nicodemus, right? The thief on the cross, Matthew, the tax collector, Saul of Tarsus, and the Philippian jailer. A governor was saved named Sergius Paulus, a centurion, Zacchaeus, another. He was a chief tax collector. Lydia, a seller of purple. People from all walks of life were converted. And you know, in the Bible does give us actually testimonies from those people of their conversion. Paul, two times after the record of his salvation in chapter 9, he gives a testimony of his salvation in chapters, 23 and 26, or 22 and 26, 23 and 26. And the blind man here is able to give his testimony to those who were there to listen. And even the demoniac was told, go home to your friends and tell them how great things the Lord has done for you and has had compassion upon you. And I felt like I've been planning, thinking about this for a long time. 40 years seems to be a long time, but for those of us who look back on 40 years, it's happened so fast, hasn't it? But 4 decades. I was 18 when the Lord saved me, so it's been now 2/3 of my life at least, or more, that the Lord has converted me. And I just wanted to, I hope you don't mind sharing God's grace, God's wonderful grace. And I would love for all of us to be able to have this opportunity through the winter here to give our testimonies, if you'd be willing to do that. Jesus was immaculately conceived. But what's the reverse of that for all of us? And I could say I was, is it immaculately conceived? He was immaculately. We were immaculately. We were contaminated. Our conceptions and our births were contaminated. Jesus was uncontaminated. Whatever you say, uncontaminated. I was born a depraved soul. I was raised in a moral home and somewhat religious. It was a Roman Catholic home. And I remember we tried to attend Mass once a week, but that started to fall away as we got older. My mother was a very kind, generous person. My father was generous, but his family side of the family was kind of rough. My father, I learned that he was his first job was setting up bowling pins. I don't know if any of you remember that. Rod, do you remember that? We all remember bowling pins that are automatically set up, but my father was given a job in a bowling alley where he went, was in the back, and he would set them up as quick as he could so that he wouldn't get hurt if somebody threw a bowling ball and that he'd have all 10 bowling pins up. But he actually was raised Protestant, or his family came from Protestant. It was McVinney and then Owen. That's Welsh, and that's Scottish, and so on, and Irish. And that's predominantly, at least in Northern Ireland, Protestant. But my father told me that the priest helped him out financially and with food when he and my grandmother were not well off. And he kind of felt beholden to the priest. And so you can imagine how difficult it was at first for my father when I left the Roman Church, because he felt like he should pay, he should pay with gratitude, by remaining in the Roman Church all these years, for the rest of his life. But I just remember being materialistic, living for things and pleasure loving and works righteousness. I can remember practicing the Mass as a priest in our basement. And I can remember having a chalice and wiping it I've got one in my pocket. I can't even think of the word. A handkerchief. I can remember that. Now, I didn't put wine in it. My mother wouldn't give me wine, but I remember practicing and my family saying, "Phil's going to be a priest." But I was selfish and self-centered and arrogant and breaking all of the commandments of God. Unlike what it says of what Simeon or Zacharias, he was keeping all the commandments of God. I was breaking all the commandments of God. And what is it that halts us in our momentum toward hell? We all know that there was a point where that was halted. And sometimes it's not right away conversion. It's just the Lord begins to kind of shock us with things. And I think what started it, and you look back in your life and some things you forget, obviously, as you get older, but I indirectly discovered that one of the priests at my high school was a sodomite. We went to Virginia Beach, and just to make a long story short, three of my friends and I just went for the ride. You remember, I don't know if any of those of you went to a Roman Catholic school, the high schools had like a religious room, a math room, and this room and that room. And they were supposed to be places where you would study math or English or religion. But we kind of hid in the religion room and we played the football game, the one that you have, the triangle paper. And, Father Durr would just kind of shield us, and because the nuns would come over and say, "You're not studying. This is for study." But Father Durr would shield us and let us play in the corner. And, so he got to like us, and we kind of got like him, that he was letting us fool around and not study. Well, little did we know, obviously, what his intentions were, but he invited bunch of us and one of his particular friends, which was our classmate to Virginia Beach. And it was some kind of big Ford car, but it didn't fit six people well. There were four of us in the back seat, and him and his friend that wasn't really close to us in the front seat, and we just couldn't wait to get to Virginia Beach. Well, anyway, when we had a room with two rooms. I've never seen that before, but you walk in, there's two bedrooms, and then the rest is like a regular hotel room. Well, the four of us were going to sleep in one bedroom, and we didn't even think of it. I mean, you're naive as a high schooler. And it hit us indirectly. And just, I don't want to go into all the facts, but it was just shocking. We were playing cards at a table in the living room, and the priest and his friend came out of the room, and anyway, they were naked. That's all I'm going to say. And we just looked at each other, and I was shocked. I'm in religion, Roman Catholicism. You know, this is the closest to God that we can get. And we stood up, and we didn't look over there anymore. And the door going to the hallway was over here. We had to go past them. But over here was the balcony. So we went to the balcony and slid the door, and four of us on a little balcony. What are we going to do now? We're here for four more days. So we both, all one at a time, jumped down from the balcony to the sand, and the sand was there. And I remember us walking the Virginia Beach shore saying, what has just happened? And, you know, as much as we were rascals, we still were not street smart in that way. We never, you know, you just don't factor that in. And I just remember, Father Durr, are you kidding me? He was somewhat feminine, but is this what homosexuality in the church? You know, you if you heard of a homosexual, it was outside. It was never inside. So I think that was a shock to me. But, you know, I never told my parents. We just hushed it. You know, people told us later, you should have brought this to the authorities. But you and I know what would have happened if four renegades brought this to the authorities of Bishop Ludden High School, that we'd have been probably kicked out. Well, anyway, it was still wrong for me not to tell my parents and not to tell the authorities. But it was like a real wake-up call to me. If he's a sinner, what about me? What about everybody in religion? Where's any hope? Well, before graduation, you never thought that within that climate that you actually would hear the gospel then. But the second baseman from our baseball team at the end of our junior year got saved, Bryant Lefex. And he would come up to my locker with a Gideon, little green Gideon Bible, and he'd open it and say, Phil, this is what this says. I don't even remember what the scriptures were, but he was quoting to me at my locker, and I remember, get away, you know, I'm in the middle of everybody. You got a Bible open to me, and he's preaching to me. And you know, I was mean to him. Brian, I'm glad it's happened to you. You know, we've been fed the riot act. Don't have how many people when you try to witness. Brian, I'm glad it's good for you. But I'm 18, 17 years old, and you know, that's for later. You know, we're in a Roman Catholic school, and then he quit the baseball team the senior year. He was our leadoff hitter. He was at least a 300 or more, 400 hitter. Always getting singles, always getting on base, the first person, you know, to get up. And I was angry. I said, Brian, why did you quit? You're our best baseball player, our best infielder. And he gave an excuse, I need time with the Lord. And I remember arguing with him, you've got time at night. You got time on the weekends. We need you. And he said, Phil, and I remember these words, you will never understand until what happened to me happens to you. That's essentially what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's exactly what he was trying to say to me. But I was furious. So the year went on. We all graduated. And 1978 came in November. And again, how do you go from there? How do you go from the shock of a priest to some seeds by a fellow classmate and the rejection of the gospel? That was a rejection. There's no way you can just explain that any other way. I rejected the gospel at my locker. And he tried at least 3 or 4 times. So 3 or 4 times I rejected the gospel of Jesus Christ. I didn't deserve one time being given the gospel. Whatever, I don't know how I got to West Virginia University. The guidance, Mrs. Duink or something like that, was the guidance counselor. And I went in there and, where am I going to go to college? Everybody assumed they were going to college. I mean, it doesn't have to be that way. Why? You know, how many people are over their heads in debt and they don't use what they've had? But I'm on the files. And everything is way out of this world expense. But I see West Virginia University, out of state, $3,400 for room, board, and tuition. That's not too much in 1978. Everybody else seemed to be over $10,000, but that's the only reason. I went to West Virginia University, $3,400 out of state. But you and I know that's not the only reason why we make decisions. God is with us if we're His elect and His people. I had no idea that Tiny existed. I had no idea that little church existed in the country. But I was wearing myself out. I was burning brain cells with alcohol, like most students do as freshmen. And I was adding to the momentum of going to hell. And one day I had a room in the corner. There were 4 corner rooms. It was a square hallway. And the 4 corner rooms were three men rooms. All the other rooms were 2. So there were 3 beds. And Mark Grogan from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 6'4". We were friends for the first 2 months, but we had a terrible argument one night. And I remember he slammed the door behind him. And I was left alone. The other fella was not there that night. And again, most wretches will just own their, and how often did this happen to me? I won the argument. It's his fault. But the Lord struck me. You arrogant, wicked, mean person. I mean, wasn't that God's grace? And I remember looking up at the ceiling, which is only about 8 foot tall, and I just said, God, where are you? I didn't even think about Bryant. But Lord, I'm supposedly a man, and I'm arguing with another man, and I want my way. I need, like I was saying, I need salvation. I didn't know what it was called. I need God, but I don't know where to find you. I knew I wouldn't find him back in Rome. I'd find more of the same. But where are you? I don't know where you are. This is November of 78. And I don't even remember the timeline. But it was only a week or two later. And I'm on Sunnyside Hill. And there's bar after bar after bar in Sunnyside Hill. And I'm in one of them. In those days, people could smoke inside bars. And there was a dance floor and all these lights and loud music and smoke. And I remember sitting on a stool. I had a couple friends there and just looking out there and saying, is this all there is to life? What a waste. What is this kind of life? What is my life? I went out and started hitchhiking. Midnight, 1 in the morning. And you and I know what can come around the corner next. Who's going to pick you up hitchhiking at 1 in the morning? An assassin? A homosexual? Another drunk? Who's going to pick you up at that time of the morning? Not an angel. It had to be an angel. I don't mean literal angel. I think it was a believer. I don't even remember his face. Don't even remember his tone of voice or what he sounded like. But right from the get-go, he was preaching to me like Bryant was. And I remember connecting, but I remember getting angry. Man, I just want to ride to my dorm, buddy. It was only a mile or two away. I just want to ride to my dorm and go to sleep. I didn't even remember why. That was the reason why I left the bar. I was looking for something. Why wasn't I connecting? This man is an answer to my sigh. But I gave him a fit. I felt like, you know, I wanted to just get out of the car. But all of a sudden, about halfway there, and you and I know what it's like, the Lord just changes your mind. And I remember thinking, and it was the Lord, listen to this guy. He's giving you a ride. He's being kind to you. Listen to him. And he just shared the gospel. And he gave me a tract. The McDonald's was closed, and everybody who picked you up hitchhiking would drop you off at McDonald's because there was a path. You'd cross the street and there'd be a path to the dorms. There were four tower dorms. A person would have to go way around to get to the front. And, you know, he was going this way. So most of the guys just said, see you later. I would just get off at McDonald's. But he said, I want to take you to the front. So he drove all the way around to the front and he opens the glove compartment and gives me a gospel tract. And says, read this when you get sober. I said, man, I'll read it now. It was a picture tract, and I lived on the sixth floor, and I walked the steps instead of taking the elevator. And it was two brothers. One was saved and one wasn't. And the one that was not saved died and was cast into hell. And the other who got saved was brought by an angel before God. The Lord was facing me with heaven and hell that evening. And again, what do? I needed Philip the evangelist. How can I understand except someone show me? I don't know what to do with this information. I don't know where to go. Where's it? The guy never gave me his name. No address on the tract. Never saw him again. And you know, isn't this the Lord? He won't let you go. He won't let his elect go. He won't let there be a disconnect from there, will he? With his elect, there won't be a disconnect. It wasn't a week or two later. And this is all in November, so it had to be a short time that my next door neighbor was a wide receiver on the West Virginia team. His name was Garnett Edwards. He was about 6'4", reaches over every defensive back, and he raced a man named Ronaldo Nehemiah. I don't know if any of you remember that name. He raced him and never made the Olympics, but he was very close to being as fast as that guy. Well, he was invited by two Christians to church, and I lived just next door to him. And the football players, even if they lived next door to you, would never give you the time of day once you were off the floor. Football, basketball, never. You're down in the cafeteria of the dorm, you're out in the streets or in the classrooms. Don't even look at you, even the ones that are on your floor. Garnett was one of them. I'm downstairs eating on Sunday morning. You know, I walked into the cafeteria. He's sitting there. I got my food, remember the tray, walking over. I was going to sit at another floor, another table. I saw him alone, but I knew he wouldn't want me to sit with him. So I'm going to another. He says, Phil, come on over here. Then Garnett talking to me here, common person. And We ate. I'm thinking, what? Why is he being friendly to me? We went up the elevator, and as the elevator doors opened, and I was going to go in my room, he was going to go in his. He said, "Phil, would you go to church with me this morning?" Church to me was stained glass windows, repetitious prayers, vain repetitious prayers, and you know, stinking incense. You'd hold your nostrils, and I just said, "No thanks. Maybe some other time." Didn't even ask him what kind of... I didn't know there was a, as it were. What do we know of a different church? We were taught that every other church wasn't right. So he goes in there, and I had a bed in the corner, three of us again, but my bed I put on each had two dressers. And I put the bed on top of the dressers and used the part of the dresser that wasn't used by the two legs. So I like being up high. And I climbed up to go take a little nap after breakfast so I could start studying or watch football after I took a nap. And for whatever reason, I fell off and slammed my head on the floor. And I'm dazed. And first thought, how do you figure this? Go to church. What's the connection between you know, a bump on the head in church? That's what the world will say to you. You've got a bump on your head to go to church. So I went next door. I hadn't showered. I had I had a jean suit on, a jean jacket and jeans on, all I remember, and disheveled hair. I hadn't combed my hair. I'd gone down to eat breakfast and go up and take a nap. And I said, Garnett, may I still take your invitation? He said, yeah. I remember him saying, you all right? And I said, I guess so. I just want to go to church. So here we went. We got in the elevator. We went down to the lobby. And Jim Firer and Dave Summers are waiting for us. They're waiting for Garnett. They got two sinners. And I remember he had a powder blue car. And Garnett and I sat in the back. And the whole way to Faith Baptist Church, they're asking me where I'm from, what my major is, right down the line. I'm thinking, I got to get out of here. This is claustrophobia. I'm in their back seat, and they're asking me personal questions. I'm really in trouble. So we drove, and I remember it was a small building. We got out. Stone driveway. Some things you remember, stone driveway. It wasn't a paved lot. And going in the vestibule and people looking at you like, wow, we got a sinner here today. I just remember thinking, these people are really paying attention to me and I don't like this attention. You just want to go in and sit down and listen. You're a lost sinner and you just don't want all the attention. And they're just like, hi, how you doing? My name's such and such. What's your name? This is claustrophobia to me. And Garnett, Dave, and Jim, take us to the third pew. I think it was the third pew on this side. What am I going to the front for? I just want to sit in the back. And I just remember thinking, what am I doing here? Well, I sat on the edge. Garnett sat next to me, and Dave and Jim sat past him. And I don't remember anything other than my heart is as heavy as a bowling ball. Just, I'm lost. And the preacher, I don't remember anything really that he said except, sinners are lost. That kind of sinners, we're all sinners. We're lost. Hell's real. Jesus is the Son of God. He died for sinners and He alone can take you to heaven. I don't remember just the gist of that. And Garnett just sat as it were chewing gum. Just sat as cold as ice. And the preacher came to the front and he said, if the Lord has spoken to any of your hearts, please, there's a room here and a room over here. And he said, somebody will share some more of what we've been talking about today. And again, it was like the Ethiopian eunuch. I need to be shown this some more. Now what do I do? I remember when I was sitting in the pew thinking, okay, I'm a lost sinner, but where's the connect? How do I get from being a lost sinner to a Christian, a real Christian? What do I got to do? It's kind of like you're saying to yourself, do you have to leap through a hoop? Is there some magical thing that these people are going to do? Because you don't know. You're totally ignorant of that. All I know is I'm lost, I'm blinded, but now how do I get to see? Where's the sight? And so I just remember going up and shaking Pastor Moran's hand and saying, I'm lost. What do I do? And Ted Barker, he was an engineer for West Virginia University. He designed that PRT system. If you've ever been there, it's a little tiny railroad car, and they run about 15 feet over the pavement all throughout town. It's a neat thing. You got to visit there and ride that sometime. He designed it, but he was a Christian. He took me an open Bible. He didn't have to say much except, Phil, you're a sinner and that Jesus died for you. He gave me the connection. call upon the name of the Lord and you'll be saved. There's no work involved. Just call upon the name of the Lord. And I can remember just bawling. Bawling because Jesus loved me so much to die for me, but bawling because I was such a wicked son. I was such a wicked son. And I told you what happened to my mother. All those wigs and the styrofoam heads on six or seven of them on her long dresser, losing her hair, going crazy. What things I had done, wrecked my brother's car and all that stuff. Just being mean and cantankerous. And I just said, Lord, forgive me of my sin. Would you let my mother forgive me? I didn't even think about their salvation yet, except I needed her forgiveness. But other things began to connect. And I went out. It was probably 20 minutes. Went out. There was nobody left. Everybody gone. Garnett gone. Dave and Jim took Garnett home. And there were just a handful of people. And I remember coming out of the room and standing about right here. And a few people came up and just some hugged, some shook my hand. Like I said, there was only 10 people maybe. And I remember one of them said, hey, Phil, we got an evening service. I mean, right from the get-go, he said, we got a church service tonight. You want to come? And these words came out of my mouth. I said, well, I guess if I need to hear this message the second time, I need to hear. I didn't know that. You know, I thought they just repeated the message. That's what they did in the Roman masses. Whether you went at 7 or 11, they were all the same messages. And from the very first day that I got saved, the Sunday night services were precious to me. And I think I went to the Wednesday service shortly after. And then I started to go to the Thursday visitation. Not long right after. But in any case, I realized the need. But just to share with you the need for us all to have a soul consciousness. No one really told me, though I knew, you know, it was obviously the Holy Spirit, but no one told me, now, Phil, you need to go back to the dorm and tell everybody what happened to you today. I don't think anybody told me that. Now, it's not. I think it's right for us to encourage people, but it just seemed the natural thing for me to do. I remember they drove me to the dorm, and I think that I went to the cafeteria and ate, and then I went upstairs. And, you know, those are the days when the Steelers were big. It was November of 1978. I think they won the Super Bowl that next year. But they were big, the Steel Curtain and so on, and Terry Bradshaw. But so you can imagine, there were tons of Steeler fans. And this is by now probably 2 o'clock. So it's near the second half, or it's the end of the first half, but this is not a good time to interrupt people from watching television. But I went to every single room. It was the grace of God. I wish I had the seal. And I knocked on every door. I knew everybody because, you know, as drinking and all that, you knew everybody. And I knocked on every door. And nobody was inside with those that opened the door. I said, please come out to the middle room. In the middle was the place where the elevator doors were. And it was a study room, a kind of a common study room. So you had all the apartments in a square. Then in the middle, another square within the square, and the walls around it, but in an elevator, and study. And so I said, I want you guys all in the study. And I think probably 30 people showed up, if maybe 20 to 30 people. And I remember saying, you know, what's Phil going to do now? Come on, this is a game. You know, what are you doing? I'm studying. And I just remember, just give me 5 minutes. I want to tell you what happened to me today. And you talk about shock. One by one, they just left. Nobody cared. That's what shocked me. This was the moment of my life that I was saved from my sins in hell for all eternity. And one by one, they walked away. Two were left. And one was Mr. Worldly Wiseman. I can remember him. He had real thick glasses, real intelligent fellow, real thick glasses. I don't remember his first name, but he said, sit down, Phil. He said, Phil, this isn't the way to do things. You know, I'm glad this has happened to you, but, you know, religion's nice, but there are many religions. You know how it is. This was the devil in pants trying to dissuade me from reaching souls. And I just remember going to my room and crying. Lord, look what you've done for me. And nobody else wants to know this. And you know what happens next? You know, we didn't have cell phones in those days, but you had a phone in the room that you could dial the operator and pay whatever it cost to call long distance. And I tried my mother and father first, didn't get hold of them. Didn't get hold of my sister. Didn't get hold of Ted. You know who I got first? My brother-in-law, Gene, that left my sister 3 years ago. You know what his first words were after I shared with him what happened to me? Phil, that's good for you, but keep it to yourself. I'll never forget those words. Gene, keep it to yourself? When you were engaged to Debbie, you told everybody about her. When you and Debbie adopted Andrea, you told everybody about Andrea. I have found Jesus Christ as my Savior from sin and from eternity and hell, and you want me to be quiet? I can't. And I remember going to church and sharing this, and people said, Phil, just take a deep breath. This is an unusual. They did it to Jesus. And unless the Lord opens their eyes like He opened your eyes, they won't be interested. And shortly thereafter, I joined the Concern group on campus. We tried to reach souls. Later, reaching people on Friday afternoons downtown. And then in 1980, in a nursing home, the night before I was to travel to Syracuse, Tanya was home for Christmas vacation. And she joined the Concern. She got a ride there. We went over in a little van. She got a ride by, I think she drove. She had a brown station, or her father had a brown station wagon, and she drove the brown station wagon. And we met in the senior home. Here we are in the senior home. And I'll probably end up in a senior home if I lived long enough. But 1981, in January, the Lord gave the text, go toward the south to prepare for the ministry. 1982, we were engaged in March. 1983, we were married. In 1986, the Lord used a similar verse that He used, go toward the south. He used a verse in Deuteronomy, you have compassed this mountain long enough. And it was a Piedmont down there where the school was. Turn you northward. And in 1986, on Quinby Drive, and you know, it's a kind of neat place if you still see it there. Quinby and South Park, next to that Pegasus restaurant, there's a salon there. They got it really nice. They got both walls on both sides are murals. It's right across from that Ace Hardware. But that was our first building. Well, other than the old demolished Orchard Park skating rink that didn't have any heat. We were there for August and September, but they said, look, there's no heat here. You got to move. And they demolished it later. But the Lord gave us that for $200 a month. We used that Quinby place because the lady who owned it drowned in the bathtub up above in the apartment above that. And the daughter and her two daughters were in a fix because the mother had left the boyfriend in the inheritance to have part of the, and anyway, it was a mess. And we tried to call because there was nobody in there, and she said, I'm sorry, we're in a mess in the inheritance. We can't even do anything with it yet. She calls the next day and says, our lawyer said we can do a year's lease, no longer than that, because it will probably be settled shortly after that. So she said, Phil, is $200 a month too much? $200 a month. And then she calls one day, a year later, and she says, I'm sorry, it's sold. We got it all settled. You got to leave. And so we went to old Papa Bear's restaurant. You remember that on Lake Avenue? Next to the cheese factory, right over the... It's demolished now, too. But I think there's garages there or something now or something. But anyway, the lady said, or the man said, you think $400 is too much for a building a little bit bigger? And then he... You know what he... Are you talking about a test in the old... In that building on Lake Avenue, I had a little study. Sunday morning, I walk in with a missionary from South Africa, and there's a note Sunday morning before he's to preach, you got to leave by next week. Church has to leave a building in 5 days. You know, what are we going to do? So we just started crying out to the Lord, and that's when this, and you know the story, last year from being here for 30 years, just... Can we just say in our lives, grace abounding to the chiefest of sinners? And it's good for us to tell it. It's good for us to rehearse the Lord's ways, because how often do we just forget God's grace? And we listen to the world that says this is all a farce. You're all living in never, never land. You're going to wake up one day and smell the roses. And this Jesus that you're trusting is just a fake, a hoax. All these things the devil puts in your mind. It's just good to remember. The Lord leads us all the way. Once I was blind, and now I can see. But I just want to publicly thank the Lord today that this month, 40 years in Christ, 40 years in Christ, to God be the glory, great things He hath done. Let's pray.